Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of Apartment Investing for Early Retirement. I'm super excited about today's episode. We have on Gino Barbaro. He is an investor, business owner, best-selling author, certified professional coach, and entrepreneur. He has grown his real estate portfolio to over 1,500 multifamily units and is also the co-founder of Jake and Gino, a multifamily real estate education company that offers coaching and training in real estate. Gino currently resides in St. Augustine, Florida with his wife, Julia, and their six children. And I couldn't have a better guest on today for today's topic about switching into multifamily. And super excited to have you on. Thank you for taking the time.
Mr. Derek Loda, let's make it happen today. How you doing?
I'm doing great. You know, new start to the year. Really got a lot of good goals for this year. And what about you? Any big, what are the big plans for this year?
I have a call at 2 o'clock after this. That's my big plan. I try not to go too far into the future anymore because, I heard you say early retirement. I like to refer to as now as my enlightening, the early empowerment, right? Because retirement is a misnomer. It's one of those things that we created back in the 70s. I was reading that Social Security was created because they wanted to retire the old people to get the new people into the workforce. It was actually something done by Germany, by Bismarck back in the late 1800s. So that's what it was created for. So this whole misnomer of, okay, I'm going to get to a retirement age, which is fictitious. I'm going to pick 65 years old and I'm going to retire. I'm going to stop doing what I've done for the majority of my adult life. I'm going to go and I'm going to do something that I want to do. Well, why don't we incorporate that while we're living, while we're young, while we're healthy, while we're vibrant? That retirement misnomer, it kills me because I was brought into that. I was raised and I was thought into that. Let's save for retirement. No, let's save to buy for assets that will provide for our retirement. And let's continue to do what we want to do as we quote unquote are retired. So for me, the way you set goals is excellent. I would tell everyone to go out there and read the book by James Clear, Atomic Habits. It's going to give you a great process because everyone thinks that goals are the ultimate thing. Goals are what you want to hit, but you have to fall in love with the system or the process that's going to get you to the goals. Fall in love with your actions. Don't fall in love with your results. If you're going to set goals for the year, make them achievable. If you're just starting out in multifamily real estate and you say, I want to have 100 units by the end of the year, that may happen. That probably won't happen if you're starting from scratch. Make it achievable. Maybe I want to buy two deals by the end of the year. That might be achievable within 12 months because if you don't hit it after 12 months, most people are going to quit and say, you know what, this is not for me. So set achievable goals and then let's reverse engineer that from yearly down to quarterly, down to weekly, and then ultimately daily. As our coach Bill Hamm says, what are you doing daily to get you to those goals of buying two deals? Well, it's the race to 80. You need to underwrite 80 deals to find one deal that really works in this part of the market cycle. So if you're underwriting two deals a week, it's going to take you 40 weeks to find that one deal. Reverse engineer how many deals you're underwriting. So when you're setting goals, set achievable goals. Set goals that, I guess, give you a little bit of passion. Don't fall in love with the goal. Fall in love with what you're doing to the goal. Fall in love with underwriting the deals. Fall in love with searching the markets. Fall in love with going on property tours. Fall in love with networking. Fall in love with going to those live events. Those are the things that are going to actually ultimately make you hit your goal. So that book by James Clear, once again, Atomic Habits, read it because you have to set up and you have to follow those great habits. And it's not hard setting habits. You just have to know how to set really good habits, empowering habits. So his book is great. And, you know, for me, for my goals, I guess the short answer is to continue to grow the Jake and Gino brand, to continue to educate students how to empower their lives, how to, you know, become financially literate because we've been taught so much crap that's going on and we really need to know what's going on. Everyone thinks that apartment investing is risky. Well, I think a W-2 job is even riskier than apartment investing because at least with an apartment investing, you have the control of that asset. With W-2, your employer controls you. You're losing money by inflation. You don't know when you're going to get downsized and there's risk in that. As you get older, your shelf life becomes less. And with technology, with jobs moving overseas, with companies leaving markets, you don't have control over that. So don't go out and kid yourself that just because you have a job or a small business like I did in the restaurant business for 20 years, that I was safe and secure. No, Grubhub comes along and starts taking Big Mac. You have McDonald's delivering food right now. I mean, everyone's taking a little piece of the pie. So don't think that security is out there for you. That's why I think multifamily investing, if done properly, is a really great hedge and it's a really great strategy. And it's a really great business to quote unquote retire into and continue on with your life.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, important thing of what you said at the end there is when done properly. You know, you can't have that idea that, oh, I'm going to go buy whatever it is and it's going to magically work out. No, you need to have that education. You need to have that understanding of how it works. And it's more than just the property. It's economics, the market, how things are affected. There's a lot that goes into it. Mm-hmm. But once you know it and you execute on that and you're buying the right properties, you're managing them right, you're financing them right, and then you sell or exit the deal at the right time, there's a lot of money to be made there. Mm-hmm. And it really life-changing if you don't set that proper education and have those proper habits, that proper diligence about stuff, you can get in trouble. So right. Again, you know, that's why I started this podcast, is to educate, whether you're going to be a passive investor or you want to be active in it. If you don't even know the slightest clue about it, start listening to podcasts, read books, go to events. Exactly like you said, there's so much that goes into it. Mm-hmm. And when done right, can change your life, can change your family's life. It can be phenomenal. So, you know, you mentioned starting out at the restaurant and that change until now. Could you kind of give our listeners a brief rundown about how you got to where you're at today? What was that change? Why did you decide to, I want to get into multifamily investing, and what caused that change, and then how you kind of built up to where you're at today?
Sure. I want everyone to picture this. It's 2009. I'm in my restaurant in the kitchen and I'm cooking something called Jake's Chicken. And it was named after Jake Stenziano. I didn't even have a dish named after me, but he had his own dish named after him because he was a drug rep doing catering. So my brother walks into the kitchen and I'm working on the grill, getting the grilled chicken out. He's got really nice sauteed vegetables on this dish. And my brother says, "This is Jake. I want to meet you. I want to introduce you. He wants to do real estate." So I'm like, great. This is back in 2009, everybody. 2 years go by. I become friendly with Jake, but not really. The fortuitous event, he's sitting in the dining room back in 2011. And he's like, "Gino, I'm going down to Knoxville, Tennessee." I'm like, "Dude, I'm looking at some deals there right now." I whipped out the laptop, looking on LoopNet. There's 30 a door. I mean, "Jake, this looks like a great market. When you get down there, let me know." Jake gets down there. He's down there 6 months without his wife. So everyone out there, it's a struggle. He moved down there by himself because he took a lateral position down there working for his pharmaceutical company. He knew the cost of living was cheaper. He knew there was no state income tax. It was just a great quality of life move for him. It took us 18 months to find that first deal. And for us, it was life-changing, that first deal. And, you know, think big, start small. It was only 25 units. But for me, I had gotten educated. I had gone through several coaching programs. I knew what I wanted, and Jake was just there as the vessel. He was in the market, so had a great relationship. We had a great partnership, value-based. He had ethics. I had ethics. We both wanted generational multifamily wealth. We didn't want to fix and flip. I didn't want to fix and flip because I already had a job. I didn't want to supplant one job for another job. So I always saw, you know, multifamily was a basic human need. You have food, clothing, and apartments. Those are your basic human needs. You need somewhere to live. And I got lucky because of the demographic shift. You have so many people wanting to rent right now that there's the dearth of affordable housing right now. So that all plays into multifamily. I got lucky with that. And everyone out there, the luckier you are, the harder you work, the luckier you get. So that's what ends up happening. I was working really hard with Jake. We bought our first deal. We partnered with my brother. 6 months after our first deal, about 4 months after our first deal, we got our second deal, which was a 36 unit. And it's just because we were in the market. The brokers liked us. We had closed on our first deal. We had actually found a fourth partner for that second deal, which is my partner, Mike. We all bought the property. And 6 months after that, we found our third deal. So it's all about getting started, but really it's the education times action equals results. I was taking a lot of action before I knew Jake. I had bought a mobile home park. I had bought a strip mall up in New York, and the action was there. But unfortunately, I wasn't educated on those spaces. I didn't stay in my lane. I didn't stay in the mobile home park or the multifamily lane, or I was just shotgunning everything. I thought commercial real estate was one big thing and it was all the same. I didn't know how to underwrite a deal. I didn't know how to select the market. I didn't know how to do due diligence. I didn't know how to analyze these deals. So after I made those two fatal mistakes in 2009, I was really like, I'm going to do the coaching. So it was fortuitous for me that when I met Jake, I knew what I was doing. I could translate my knowledge to him. He was in the market and he had the passion to get out of his job. And he did within 18 months of buying that first deal. He left. It took me about 3 years after that first deal to leave the restaurant. And it was baby steps, everybody. You know, don't think you're going to buy a property and then quit. I would say do the 10% entrepreneur. Everyone calls it a side hustle, a second gig. I was working at the restaurant full time and I was buying the real estate and I was doing the podcast and I was talking to brokers all at the same time. When I got to a point where I said to myself, I'm making enough income from this that I can leave. And I was probably about 80% there. You're never going to be there. And it's just a leap of faith. And then obviously when you do that leap of faith and you start working at something full time, all of a sudden you start getting these opportunities that you didn't have when you were doing it part-time. And it's really hard to convince yourself, but that's what ended up happening. All of a sudden we got another big deal in the contract because I was able to underwrite it. I was able to visit Knoxville more because I wasn't working at the restaurant. I was able to do more podcasts. I was able to write more blogs. I was able to write the book and on and on and on. So for us, it was just getting that first deal and then just working slowly and working smart and just start to scale up. It's like you said, Derek, it's buy right, manage right, and finance right. Those are the three legs. If you can really nail those legs, and obviously, you know, the buzzword today is syndicate right. So that's the fourth leg. That's the next leg to learn. If you can learn all four of those and use what tool you need at what time, because syndication is only a tool in the toolbox. Seller financing is a tool in the toolbox. So you just have to know when to use those tools, what part of the market cycle to use them in.
Yeah, absolutely. And with mentioning syndication, you know, and syndicating right, I know that you've kind of transitioned into that now. You've done a couple of deals, mm-hmm. syndicating those deals as opposed to, you know, having that those partnerships earlier on. What really made you look into that realm, start to utilize that tool in the toolbox and the timing of it? Was it something you thought about doing earlier?
We didn't think about doing it earlier because we were being successful with our refi and roll. We're able to refi out over $9 million from our portfolio and continue to buy, not go out and do the vacations, not buy the Lamborghinis, but roll that money into it. And at that part of the market cycle is great. Back when we started, the Jobs Act came out in 2012. So syndication was not as prevalent as it was, you know, in the last 2, 3, or 4 years. So we were just successful and we were just creating equity for ourselves and we weren't thinking outside the box. And unfortunately, Derek, syndication is another business because you have to deal with investors. You have to deal with, you know, taking care of their needs. When you're buying a deal just between partners, it's just the 3 or 4 or 5 of you and that's it. You don't have to send out any kind of memorandums or anything. It's just you buy the deal, let's run it together. The syndication, you know, when we decided to do it, we had already done one live event. We had about 600 people on our invested database. We have to create substantive relationships with all of them. I didn't have the time to do that because I had Jake and Gino and Jake was doing the property management full time. We actually solicited a partner. We got Dylan Marma, head of Rank Partners right now, head of investor relations. He started dialing all those investors and prepping it up. So a tip for everybody out there, if you're going to start syndicating, start raising money today because you need the money before you find the deal. Because if you find a deal and then go look for the money, you probably will not be able to get those investors on your deal because you're going to need to have a substantive relationship, especially if you do a 506B offering. And they're sophisticated investors, you need to have that substantive relationship. So for us, it took a little bit of time to reach out to everybody. And it took a little bit of time of convincing of like, wow, we're not going to get 100% of the equity for the partners. We're only going to get 30% as far as the general partners. But there's so many benefits because you're going to get an acquisition fee. You're going to get, you know, paid because you have no really very little money into this deal. So the mechanics were, it's a great process. It's a great way to lever up. It's a great way to scale up. It's a great way to come up to the deal with less money out of your pocket. So there's so many pros to it. The con for us was, man, we have other people in this deal. What happens if we don't lose money or we can't pay our investors? That was our fear. And man, you know what? We've never done one before. So what's the process look like? And I don't know some of these terms. And it's just the fear of doing your first deal. That was our fear of doing mm-hmm. syndication. And one of the way we allayed that fear was, let's start small. Our first deal was only a $6 million syndication. The deal, it was 130 units. We had to raise $2.6 million. Now, if we didn't raise that money, we had our own money that we could buy ourselves. So just start small. Start with a small deal. And then from there, start scaling up. Our next deal was a $14 million deal. And then our third deal we syndicated back in May was a $10 million deal. So, I mean, it's like that thinking big, but starting small and then progressing.
Yeah. With having investors and bringing on new teams, it really is a business. And mm-hmm. either way you look at it, whether it was with a smaller group or if you're syndicating, it's still a business. You need to look at each property as a business. Mm-hmm. And some people might look at it as, well, it's like a side hustle. It's a hobby, you know, whatever. It's a business. You know, you need to treat that in that manner. And you mentioned about if you're going to be syndicating, you need to start raising money today. People who are just getting started in syndication probably think, well, how do I raise money if I don't have a deal to show them? Mm-hmm. Like, how do I go about this?
So let me interject before and saying, if you want it to be passive and you have capital, you can be an LP, a limited partner investor, in a syndication. That takes knowledge, though. Most people just want to give their money away to mutual funds and give their money away to the syndicators. You can learn how to underwrite deals. You can learn how to analyze the market. You can learn how to underwrite the sponsor and look at all that and invest in these deals responsibly. So that's one way. You just need to get educated on that. And as far as starting to raise capital, if you've never done it before, that's what these communities are for, whether it's a Jake and Gino community or any of these other educators out there. They're going to teach you how to do that. Most people don't know what a credibility book is. Create a credibility book. Even if it's not, you don't have any deals yourself. If you're handing it off to a professional, whether it's a real estate broker or an investor, it's going to have the market you're selected. It's going to have your business plan in there. And if you don't have a deal, you have a case study. You can put case studies in there of deals that you're looking at. And you know what? If you have a little bit of IRA money and you want to become an LP in somebody else's deal and you invest in someone else's deal, well, hey, there's your case study because you've invested in a deal. So for us, that's the first step, is to really get educated on the space. The way I learned syndication was I'm doing what you're doing. I podcasted about 15, 20 syndicators. They all had little different models. It was basically the same thing, but pull a little bit from one person, pull a little bit from somebody else, see what works best for you, figure out what type of investor you want to work with, what type of returns they're going to be comfortable with, what type of deals you like. And then from there, start out with that pitch book, start going to meetups, create a meetup, create a podcast, write a blog, write an ebook, start capturing people's emails and start talking to them and start offering and giving them value and start talking to them as if multifamily is an alternative to the stock market.
With that, with starting a meetup or a podcast or just showing up, you know, I think a lot of people go through it where right up here, this is their biggest, what's stopping them right now. Did you ever have that when you were starting out? And
how- Everyone has that. If everyone doesn't have that, it's a fear thing, right? That's why I went to coaching school. I didn't go to coaching school to become a life coach. I went to coaching school for personal development. You know, Jim Rohn says that people are too busy working for an employee than working on themselves. The more you can work on yourself and your skills, the wealthier you're going to get. So, you know, we talk about energy blocks. If everyone out there wants to listen to a podcast, me and my wife do, it's called The Multifamily Zone. And we talk about it. It's right behind me, for all the YouTube listeners. We talk about it and we have the energy blocks, those four blocks that limit us and really restrain us, whether it's a limiting belief. And Derek is talking about what we call in life coaching, the gremlins. Those are those inner critics, those inner voices. And it's really important to watch out what you put in your mouth and watch out what you put in your head, what you're listening to every day. And we can't control what's going on externally. We need to control what's going on internally. It's 95% internal blocks that's going on within us, whether it's a limiting belief like, you know what, I need money to get into real estate. Yeah, you do need money maybe, but it's not your money, right? We're just talking about a syndication. You're raising money from other people. Well, I can't do that. Well, maybe you can't do that today, but it's going to take time to do that. And how you shatter limiting belief is you just got to keep plugging away. But that's why I went to coaching school. You need to have a strong enough why. Why are you doing anything? Why are you running that marathon? Why are you in real estate? Why are you going to that job? If you have a strong enough why, we always figure out how. Because when it becomes difficult, when the market cycle is tough right now, you can't find deals and deals aren't making sense and investors are hanging up the phone on you, you still have that passion to continue because you have a burning desire. And for me, my burning desire was getting out of the restaurant, really taking control of my life and really just being a role model for my children. Those are my three big whys, I think. And when I had tough times and we weren't closing deals and deals weren't working for us, I look back on that and that just kept me on the road.
That's a big thing, is not only why are you doing it, but who are you doing it for? Mm-hmm. And I don't have a family yet, but you have a large family. How much does that really push you to be able to make it, you know, not just for yourself, but for your family? And do you treat it as the whole family is able to get involved, or how do you kind of go about that? Is that something that you're really teaching your children about?
Yeah. So there's a couple things. Number one, most people use their children as an excuse. And unfortunately, that's the truth. So parenting tip number one, if you're not happy as a parent, then you're doing something wrong, because you can't just be worried about your kids' happiness, because if you're happy at the top, it'll emanate down. So for example, I wanted to move to Florida 3 years ago. Everyone's like, you're going to take your kids away from their friends and blah, blah. My kids are in school. It doesn't matter. It's your happiness, because it depends on you. If you're not happy, you're miserable, it's going to emanate from them. We moved to Florida. Thank God I didn't listen to anybody. My kids love it down here. It's 80 degrees outside today. We're outside playing basketball. In New York, it's 30 and raining. I'm just saying. So you have to worry about your happiness. The second thing is, don't use them as an excuse, because if you use them as an excuse, you're not, I don't want to say manning up or womaning up, whatever it is. You have to take that out. I learned from Eric Thomas that if you're not a motivated individual, I've always been motivated. I've always wanted to succeed and to become better, because you're either growing or you're dying. That's the reality. So Eric Thomas at our event last year said, if you can't find the motivation, look at the people that you're serving and use them as the motivation. So for example, with Jake and Gino, I want to become a better speaker. I don't want to embarrass my team. I want to create sales for them. So I need to be better at the skill sets that I need to develop, whether it's getting on podcasts, whether it's being a better coach, whether it's being a better teacher. I need to learn those skills. So for me to become motivated about that, I think about Josh and I think about Jen and I think about Jake. I don't want to let them down. So what do I need to do not to let them down? And it's the same thing with your spouse. I don't want to let my wife down. I don't want to embarrass her in front of people. So how I act and how I speak and how I talk to people and how I relate really reflects upon her as much as it does me. So I'm going to try to become the best person that I can be to not be a failure for the people around me. Now, I don't need that as much because like I said, I'm really motivated. But if you're out there and you're like, oh, I don't feel like doing it today. I can't get out of bed. Well, who are you letting down? Because you're letting somebody down. And if you're letting somebody down, because you're always willing to do more for others than you are for yourself. And that's the reality. That's why accountability coaching, that's why having a life coach is really important, because you don't want to get on that call tomorrow. But you know what? You're not going to let that coach down. You're going to do all that work to get it done. If you're by yourself on an island, it doesn't work. My 20-year-old, she's a junior in college. Her major is... she is a missionary, so she wants to do missionary work, and she's doing philosophy and religion as her major. Not a huge money person, but you know what? She's working with Jake and Gino. She's doing all the editing. She's making her own jewelry, so she's selling jewelry online, and she's working at a hotel, Casa Monica. So she's got different layers of income, because I said, Gabriella, in the church, they need money. No margin, no mission. So it all emanates from money. The way you look at money, you're a steward of your own money. And the way you use your money is really empowering. You can waste it, you can spend it, you can share it. With putting an event on or doing missionary work, you need to have money. So don't look at money as being evil. So with her, it's been a progression and she's come a long way. And I'm really proud of her because she's got those different areas of revenue and she's looked at it differently. My son is 17 years old. Quick story about him. When he was 15 years old, he wanted to buy an amplifier. He wanted to spend $1,500 for an amp. He killed me for the next 3 months. Dad, I want to buy it. I said, Mike, you have $4,000 in the bank. I'm not letting you pay 25% of your net worth to an amplifier. You can wait. And I did not let him buy it. The better part of me said no. He invested in a deal with us last year in December, put his whole $5,000. We're going to be refining that deal out. He's going to get more than twice his money back. And he understands now, wow, that instant gratification, I delayed. I can buy 3 amps now with the extra money. So getting him in that business frame of mind, and he's working in our office right now a couple of days a week with my brother who works with us doing the education. Not pushing him too much, but getting him involved and letting him understand and letting him come. He comes to the boot camps with us also, being him surrounded on calls and listening to all these messages about money. Money's not evil. Money is just a purpose. It's just a means to an end. It's just a medium of account. It's a store of value. If they can understand that, I don't want them to work for money. I want them to work to buy assets. That's what I want them to understand. And my 14-year-old was just sitting down with her before the podcast, going over our personal financial statement, showing our savings and showing, she's like, Dad, you make that much and you're killing me for buying a $100 tennis racket. I said, it's not the $100 tennis racket, Sophia. I said, when you start making more money, the tendency is to spend more money. So it's the Parkinson's law. And that's one of the things that we have to fight against. Just because you make more doesn't entitle you to buy more or to enjoy more. That's not how life works. You want to make more, invest it, and have your investments pay for your lifestyle. So for her, she already gets it. She's been working with me for a little while. I keep having her read those Rich Dad, Poor Dad books, putting those messages in there. So I think that's important for your kids. Don't kill them. Don't put a savings account when they're 7 or 8 years old and have them save money, because then all of a sudden when they're 15 and 16, that savings account to them looks like it's painful because you're taking something away from them, right? Don't connect pain and savings together. Make them understand, like I did with my son, you're saving that money. And then all of a sudden you're going to be able to buy something with that thing and not a toy, but a real asset. So involve them in your decisions with investments. Just always talk to them about it. And as far as partnerships go, I think everyone has limiting beliefs about partnerships and assumptions. If one went bad, usually look within yourself, because every partnership that's gone bad, it's usually, from my perspective, I was part of that problem. I didn't vet the partner outright. We didn't have proper value-based decision making. We didn't have the right ethics going on. We didn't have the right goals going on. And that is really huge. For Jake and I, we clicked. He works his ass off and I work my butt off too. He does what he says he's going to do. I do the same thing. When he's not feeling great one day, I pick up the slack and vice versa. I think you have to like your partner, because I talked to Jake. I've already talked to him 3 times today. I've got a call in an hour with him. and we've got a podcast in 3 hours. So you need to like your partner. You need to be able to work with him. You need to be able to, you know, have those difficult conversations, and you just need to be able to scale up. And like you said, how do you scale up? You have to have faith in people. You have to pick the right people. You have to build a culture. You have to have a mission statement. You have to have core values. Our core values for our company are people first, unwavering ethics, make it happen, growth mindset, extreme ownership. Those are our five core values. What are your core values? And then you build a partnership off of that, and you build a company, and you start hiring off of that. I wish I'd known that 5 years ago, because I used to have crappy employees because I was a crappy boss and I didn't know what I wanted. Now I know what I want, and I know what we're looking for in a person, and it's easy to gravitate. And as you can see, Derek, the quality of people we have in Jake and Gino is a direct correlation of that, because I know what we want in our community, and that's what attracts us to our community. We have great people because we have a great culture that we've set in place. That makes sense?
Yeah. It starts at the top. And if you want something, you need to be able to project that so that you're attracting the people that really you want and you need to grow that company. Mm-hmm. And I think something important to touch on, and you mentioned it, is that with Jake, you didn't just jump into a partnership right away. You knew him for 2 years. Mm-hmm. You got to see that, yes, those values align. Multifamily, when done correctly, can be fantastic. Partnerships, when done correctly, you do your due diligence, treat it as if you were buying a property. With a partner, do your due diligence. Make sure that you guys get along. Like you said, 3 calls, a podcast, another call. Just it's more than just, yeah, we're both going to sign on this and that'll be that.
And Derek, for people out there looking to get into a partnership in real estate, you can do it you can do it deal specific. You know, the three pillars are market cycle, exit strategy, and debt. So let's say you're buying a 20-unit deal, me and Derek. It can be specific to that deal. As long as Derek and I create an operating agreement that says Derek does this work, I do that work. We're going to look to sell the deal in 3 to 5 years and have everything structured out in an operating agreement. You don't have to partner with somebody on every deal. You can partner with them on 1 or 2 deals and see how that goes. And then if it goes well, maybe you do another deal, but have separate operating agreements and just make sure you understand what each deal's exit strategy is, what each deal's business plan is for that deal, and make sure you execute on that. And you have realistic expectations. If your partner is going to say to you, you know what? I can't travel on the weekends. I need a month off. Well, maybe that's not the right partner. Just figure out what the expectations are and what, you know, responsibilities and duties are for each partner. Set them out in the beginning on the front end.
When I first started out in real estate, I kind of jumped into a partnership because I thought in my mind that it's a partnership. It's like whatever we do. You can go on a deal by deal basis. And I think in this community, there are so many people open to doing that. You know, you don't have to jump in set for till death do us part, basically. Mm-hmm. You can do it on a deal by deal. Maybe you do a few and then you go, yeah, I think this is really great. Or maybe it's, maybe not. I don't think we really align on something. But you can work together on deals. You figure that out. Obviously, you don't want to go in blind, but you don't have to. You can kind of date them. Mm-hmm. You don't have to marry them right away. Yeah. So, and yeah, when you find the right piece for you, it can just propel both of you forward, or however many are in it. You might have 3 partners on a deal, 5, whatever. You kind of touched on it at the beginning, but for you, how do you define retirement? What does that mean to Gino?
It's funny because I've been retired 3 years since I left the restaurant, and I'm working, I don't want my wife to hear this, but I'm probably working about as much as I did at the restaurant. But I think retirement to me is working with who you want to, when you want to, where you want to, and basically why you want to, because you're playing with, you know, you're playing with house money when you're retired. You have enough passive income coming in. And I'll guarantee you most of the people who hit that, 90% of those people are going to feel unfulfilled if they just quote unquote retire and travel. They can do that for a few months, but then all of a sudden they're going to lose the juice. They're going to lose that whole, okay, I'm dying. I'm not growing. I'm not contributing. And really, life really is a lot of fun when I get these emails from students who say they closed the deal, the closers club. They close the deal, or they leave their job, or, you know, that's where I get a lot of fun and that's excitement for me. So, and it's a weird thing in life. The more people that do that, the better I get paid, but I'm not doing that to get paid. I'm doing that because I really like it. So there's a loop going on. I like it. I help people. I get paid. More people I help, more people I get paid. And that's where the loop is. And that's why retirement, when you can start doing that, all of a sudden you can really start creating other forms of businesses and creating a business. I was just talking to my son about it today because he read the cash flow book from Robert Kiyosaki. What's the difference between a self-employed and a business? A self-employed is a person like I was has a small business, whether it's a lawyer's office, whether it's a doctor's office or one restaurant, and you're an employee of that place. You can't grow. You don't have systems. You don't have people. You don't have culture in it. What we're creating with Jake and Gino and Rand Partners and the Rand Property Management, we're creating individual businesses where one day, if we want to sell one of those businesses off, we can. Do I have to be there 24/7? No, I have people that, you know, have jobs. I have systems in those. So for me, retirement is really, it should be like the highlight of your career, where you found something you really love to do. You found your sole purpose and you're living an abundance mindset and you're helping other people achieve what they want to achieve.
Was there like one moment, was it a light, whether a life event or a book that you read that really changed your mentality and made you figure out, I want more, and got you started that multifamily, you know, investing in apartments, taking control of that is your kind of that path to follow?
So I can give you two quick ones. First one is T. Harv Eker. I'm looking at the book right now, Secrets of a Millionaire Mind. It's a little too advanced for my 14-year-old, but that book just hit me in the gut because it's all about personal responsibility. The fruit is in the roots. My roots sucked. That's why my fruit wasn't good. And I was blaming T. Harv and saying, what does that guy know about me? He doesn't know my situation. Well, unfortunately, you read the book and you're like, wow, that's really painful. So for me, your financial thermostat, my financial thermostat was set for $150,000 a year and it wouldn't go up. It'd go up a little bit, then it'd go back down. Just like when you open the window, your thermostat gets reset. I would challenge everyone out there to read that book and get uncomfortable. And it's going to make you uncomfortable because it's going to make you realize that it's all personal responsibility. Entrepreneur is someone who's personally responsible, whether it's my wife, who's a housewife, she's personally responsible for the family and the kids, or it's Derek for doing a podcast, or it's Gino for having Jake and Gino. We're personally responsible for what we're doing. That's what makes us entrepreneurs. I think the other story is, you know, working on Christmas Eve, coming home at 10 o'clock at night, would get in at 6 in the morning. My whole family's there. We'd have 35, 40 people at the house. And there's baked clams and there's fried shrimp. Everything's cold. The kids already opened the presents. I'm the last one and I missed it all. So that really made me think to myself, I don't want to do this anymore. That's why there was that big why. I was moving away from pain, that motivation for moving away from pain. Another quick story, washing dishes at the restaurant. Sitting there going, I'm doing $12 an hour work here. What am I doing this for? While my brother's walking in from barbecue and having fun. And I'm thinking, there's more to life than just this. I don't want to be doing this anymore. So if you need pain in the short run to get you motivated and get you inspired to move away from it, hopefully that pain works and then you're going to be either moving away from pain or moving towards pleasure, which is what I'm currently doing right now.
What would you say is one thing that people can do to kind of take that leap?
What I would tell people is to become really clear. Go find a life coach. Spend a few bucks on a life coach. And not just because I'm a life coach, but find someone who works with you, right? If you're in Wisconsin or you're in Milwaukee, wherever you are out there, whether you're in New York, try to meet with somebody, try to schedule it and try to get clear. And it's not just about not just to set goals, write down what you want. I want to become financial. What you really need to do is become clear on what you want in your life, because most of us focus on what we don't want. I can ask somebody, hey, what do you want? When I was at the restaurant, what do you want, Gino? Well, I don't want to be here. That's not what I asked. I didn't ask what you didn't want. I asked what you did want. So if you can't focus on what you do want, that's the thing. So become clear on your goals. That's the first thing. Set up that. And if you need to talk to somebody, talking to a spouse or to a friend, there's no empathy there. They're sympathetic. They're pulling for you. So they might not be detached and give you, I don't want to say the proper guidance or the proper advice, because we all have the answers within ourselves. We need somebody to pull those answers out because of the fear. And the life coach will raise your level of energy, will make you see things clearly, and then you write down your goals from that. It's hard for a spouse to do that, because like if you're saying, Derek, I want to move to Florida, and your spouse is like, I don't want to do that. But if you're talking to a life coach, the next question is, so what does that look like? How long is it going to take? What steps do you need? All of a sudden, you can start filling out a life plan. And that's what we need. We need a life plan to go off of our lives, because everyone's life is different. Everyone's goals are different. Everyone's values and their beliefs and their choices are all different. So we need to become clear on that. And I think the next thing is just be careful who you surround yourself with. If you want to become a millionaire, don't be surrounding yourselves with people who are making minimum wage and complaining, because you're going to become part of that group. Unless you're strong enough to raise them to your level, it's not going to happen. Read Jim Rohn. You have to surround yourself with the five people that you're around. Believe it or not, what's going to happen? Now, the five people that I'm around most of the time, Jake, Josh, my wife, I would say my brother now, all really highly ethical, highly smart, highly motivated, highly successful people. That's going to make me successful sooner or later. It's going to rub off. I'm going to rub off on them. They're going to rub off me. And that's what's ended up happening.
Yeah. And I can attest to the getting that clarity. Spoke with a life coach. Well, actually, your wife, Julia, And it, because I was in a position of, I don't really want this.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what is it that you want? What does that look like?
Mm-hmm.
And what are the steps to get there? Mm-hmm. You know, because otherwise it can be really overwhelming and it prevents you from making that leap. Mm-hmm. But if you break it down, this step and then this and this and this, yeah, it might be 30 steps on there, but at least being able to cross off one of them, that pushes you to get the next one, mm-hmm. you know? And I think that's just super important. I would really encourage people to just think about really what it is that you want life to look like.
Mm-hmm.
And then think about any step to get to that point, you know, which, and again, there's a lot of guidance that you can get from life coaches, and it can be someone right around you, or you look up and you find someone. But yeah, just getting clarity is definitely huge. It was huge for me. How do you like to give back to others?
Multiple different ways. First way is just fly people down here on vacation, just because I can. We have charitable, donations I give to Focus. It's a Catholic missionary group. I also give to the Franciscan Friars of the Renewal. They're Catholic brothers who live in have different friaries in Harlem, in New Jersey. They serve the poor, so it's a great way. And I also go down and I cook for them also, so it's just another way to give back. It's not just giving back money, it's giving back your time, because making connections with people who don't have families, who are drug addicted, or who are alone, and being able to sit with them and eat with them is a really, really powerful testament. And also, I want my kids to see that. So giving back that way, I mean, even getting on calls with some students sometimes and not charging, that kind of stuff, giving of your time and giving of your treasure is really important. And I think it's an important to be a testament to my children, to show them that, hey, you know what? Just because you make more money doesn't entitle you to spend more money. It entitles you to help others also. That's what my, you know, my feelings are.
You know, I think there's so much money out there, and being able to want to have a lot of that in under your control isn't necessarily deemed as I'm being greedy, mm-hmm. because what are you going to do with that money?
Mm-hmm.
And when it's in the right hands, it can impact so many lives. And you said, it's not just giving money, but it takes money to go up and cook and, you know, put everything together. It takes money to fly people down so they can enjoy being around your family, you know, just everything. Mm-hmm. There's so much great that you can do with it. So don't see it as I'm being greedy. It's what are you going to do with it?
We've created Rand Cares behind me here. So Rand Cares is an organization where last year we fed 10,000 kids at Thanksgiving. This year we fed 15,000 kids at Thanksgiving. So that's a great testimony. We've built a playset for, I think it was United Way. Also, so we're trying to donate as much as possible for the community, even for our employees. So it's a really cool thing. It's a really great culture builder, because a lot of employees want to give back also. And sometimes they're not able to give back, whether it's money. But if we can get our CapEx team out there building a playset for a community, that's an awesome way to give back. So just try to be creative as possible. It's not always about the money. It's about giving of your time also.
So lastly, how can our listeners find out more about you?
Very simple. Just go to jakeandjr.com. We have our podcasts on there. We have our blogs on there. You can go to randcre.com also. That has all our different other entities on there, whether it's the property management, our Rand Capital, our Rand Partners. Check out those websites. And my email is gino@jakeandjr.com. So if you want to reach out to me, just shoot me an email.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Gino. You're a real source of inspiration. I know they've gotten to know you over the last year and just how much you've impacted other people. And people should definitely hop on, listen to some of your podcasts. Well, all of them, frankly, there's always great information for different aspects of your life and your business. So thank you again for taking the time. To our listeners, thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe and leave a review and share it out on social media so we can continue to reach more and more people and change their lives. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Derek.